We have several different cultures, very diverse cultures in APEC, as you have seen, and ensuring that we give everyone the space and the time to build the trust, to build the trust in the psychological safety for themselves, and to allow this is very important.
Hello and welcome to The Coach Talk. I'm Kai Kochmann, your host on this coaching and consulting show. And today's episode is called The Coach Talk on Tour, because today I want to take you with me on a recent journey through Asia, a journey that reminded me once again how deeply culture shapes leadership, communication, and the way we deal with conflict. I've been working as a leadership coach and trainer, mainly with international and intercultural leadership teams, for over 20 years now. And recently, my work took me first to Singapore and then to Japan, two countries in Asia, and yet culturally very different worlds. And if you ask yourself what my assignment was, in Singapore, I worked with a team that is currently reviewing and adjusting their way of working at the Singaporean subsidiary of a German family-owned mid-sized company. In Japan, I was working in Tokyo for a few days as I facilitated an international leadership program with participants from India, China, Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, and Japan. Now, what connects these experiences is one central question. How do leaders communicate, build trust, and communicate across cultures? Now, let's have a closer look at these two fascinating countries. First, Singapore, a highly pragmatic, globally connected city-state. Then Japan, a society shaped by harmony, indirect communication, and a very subtle understanding of trust. Along the way, and in this podcast episode, you will hear short original voices from people I met on this journey, and I will share a few practical insights that you can directly apply in your own leadership work. Okay then, start with Singapore. To understand leadership and communication in Singapore, we need to take a short look back also in history. In the 1960s, Singapore made a decisive move that still shapes the country today. Under the leadership of Lee Kuan Yew, Singapore separated from Malaysia and consciously positioned itself as an open, globally connected city-state. One of the most important decisions was to make English the main working and administrative language. This was not about cultural identity, it was a strategic economic decision. English became the neutral bridge between Chinese, Malay, Indian, and other communities. It also connected Singapore directly to global markets, multinational companies, and international trade. This decision created a society that is Asian in its values, but Western in its business language and professional standards. At this point, I would like to bring in a short original voice from somebody from Singapore. I spoke with Willy Wu, a sales professional in Singapore, about the cultural specifics and what it needs to be successful in making business in Singapore.
Willy, how would you describe what is typical, the culture here in Singapore focusing on business? What should people have in mind when they work here or come from abroad to be successful?
Well, Kai, thanks a lot for having me. Really here, very nice to be on your podcast, and it's always been an exciting time whenever I listen to any of your sharings. Well, coming from a Singaporean, I think that we are a hub for innovation, whether or not it's via Asia or through Europe or Americas. Singapore is very known to be well connected to the various regions. We speak multiple languages, whether or not it's English, Mandarin, and even including Malay or Bahasa Indonesia, that connects us to the broad part of Southeast Asia. So the question whether or not what we or whoever were to do business in the region would need to take note of, I think it's to respect the culture, I would say. The people are eager to make things happen. I think as a Singaporean, we are hardworking people. We come from very diverse backgrounds, be it language-wise or even religion. So we have a very natural instinct of being very accepting of other races or religion. And I think that helps us form a bridge to different people very naturally. And if anybody were to be interested in doing business more in Singapore, I encourage you, just speak with any of us. And if there's a chance, think about Sennheiser as well.
Thank you very much. And perhaps one question, if you would compare the closeness to the way how people would perhaps take decisions or communicate openly, if you compare that to Europe, you've been to Europe also many times, compared perhaps to Japan, Korea, and China, where is on the scale closeness to Europe? Where is Singapore?
Wow, that's a very good question. I think that Europeans are a bit quicker, I would say, to arrive at a decision. It's not to say that they are not emotional. They are still emotional creature, but the task at hand sometimes drives them. Whereas in the other part of Asia, there could be a greater emphasis on culture, you know, and hierarchy. So do take note of that if you were to have any meetings or to even a simple thing like having a meal. Just take a little bit closer note to that. If possible, please check in with your partners. That would help as well. Yeah.
Vidi, thank you so much. Well, what you've just heard in my interview with Vidi Vu reflects something I see again and again in Asia. Especially Singaporean teams are highly skilled at working, very diligent and very experienced across cultures. That has to do with their diverse backgrounds. And what they expect is clarity, respect and structure. And compared to other Asian countries, especially to Japan and Korea, there is a strong hierarchy in Singapore, but it is perhaps less rigid than in Japan or Korea. So from my experience, three characteristics are essential if you want to understand leadership and teamwork in Singapore. Number one, pragmatism over ideology. Singapore is deeply pragmatic. What works, works. What does not work is changed quickly. And this shows up strongly in leadership, with clear goals, clear responsibilities, and a strong focus on execution. Second, collective harmony with clear hierarchy. Singapore is still a collectivist society. Harmony matters most. Open confrontation is usually avoided. At the same time, hierarchy is accepted. Leaders are expected to lead, to decide, and to provide direction. And number three, efficiency and accountability. Time matters, results matters, and meetings are usually well-structured. People expect preparation and clarity. So my personal experience after working for many, many years in different Asian countries, that especially Singapore has a very open and straightforward approach in welcoming people, and everybody speaks a very good English, and that's thanks to, again, what we said historically has been coined in the last century, in the 60s, by their Prime Minister, Mr. Lee Kong-yew, who has decided that this should be the primary language. And therefore, I think you will be very successful if you're well prepared, if you're structured, and if you respect hierarchy and never underestimate the importance of good preparation. Singaporeans belong to those who are best educated, perhaps around the globe, and they are usually very well prepared to meetings. So keep this in mind, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun, delicate food, and wonderful experiences in Singapore, but especially very successful, long-lasting business partners. after 4 days of facilitating a workshop in Singapore, I got on a plane and flew another 7 hours. And really, you tend to underestimate the distances in Asia. Another 7 hours leg before I finally landed in Tokyo in the afternoon. Now, an international leadership training is waiting for me, not just with Japanese participants, but with diverse group from people across Asia. Now, Japan is a very different story, mildly put. Japanese society is deeply shaped by Shintoism and Buddhism. Shinto emphasizes harmony with nature, relationships, and tradition. Buddhism adds reflection, impermanence, and self-discipline. So together they form a culture where harmony is not a nice to have, it is a core value. This has profound implications for communication and leadership, of course. Now, let's have a deeper look and insight into what that means for communication. Japan is coined by a high context culture. Meaning is often not expressed directly through words. Silence, pauses, the tone of voice, and the context carry much more meaning than explicit statements. For leaders from low context cultures, like me, for example, coming from Germany, which is very low context, because we are very straightforward speaking out what we think and what we feel, this can be deeply confusing. A yes in Japan does not always mean agreement. A polite response does not necessarily mean commitment. And working with Japanese, this time I learned something that's very, very important to understand, that's also quite new for me at that point. It is the concept of onne and tatame. One concept that is crucial if you want to understand trust in Japan. Now, this concept is especially interesting for us Germans who tend to expect authenticity. We always claim to be authentic, to show and speak out what we really think. And definitely, this would never, ever work in Japan. Therefore, they have this concept of tatame and onne, which I'm about to explain. So, tatame is the so-called public face. It shows what is socially appropriate to say. Honne is the true inner opinion, what someone really thinks or feels. In professional settings, tatemae dominates. Direct disagreement is rare, if ever. Now, here comes the interesting and often misunderstood part. In Japan, trust is often built outside formal meeting rooms, very often over food and drinks. So, alcohol and having fun plays a social role. It creates a temporary space where hierarchy softens and onne, so the inner feeling, the true inner opinion, can emerge. Let me give you a constructed example. In a formal meeting, a Japanese colleague may politely agree to a proposal. Later, during an informal dinner, perhaps after a few drinks, the same person might say, "To be honest, I have some concerns about this approach." And this is not hypocrisy. This is cultural intelligence. So if you ignore these informal signals, you miss the real conversation. So in a high-context culture like that of Japan, people tend not to ask many questions and they value silence. They are patient with regard to vagueness. On the contrary, in low-context cultures, such as those of the West, again, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, the US, of course, and even Brits, people often ask questions to try to make everything clear because they are less tolerant about ambiguous situations. And that's an important understanding, that dealing with ambiguity, with not being very clear, is something that may provoke Westerners to become impatient, but it is of a core importance to remain calm, to observe, and to read between the lines by observing the body language and the mimics, which sometimes says much more than a direct conversation. Self-reflection.
At this point, I invite you to take a moment to reflect. What were the most challenging situations you have experienced in another culture? Was it not understanding others or not being understood yourself? And how did you feel when you noticed that someone reacts differently than you expected? Do you become impatient? Do you sense inner relentlessness or even aggression? Or do you remain calm and perhaps even experience it as something amusing and out of the ordinary? And what would help you develop intercultural understanding? Have you ever taken part in an intercultural training or completed an intercultural management program? I had the opportunity to speak with an HR manager from a mid-sized company in South Asia about what he considers to be the essential elements of an intercultural training and what participants from Western culture backgrounds in particular should pay attention to.
Christian, you are regional HR manager for APAC, so Asia Pacific, a native German, have been living for over 10 years in Australia. And out of your role, what makes a impactful leadership training in these regions?
Kai, thank you so much for having me here. I think for me, it's very important to build the trust first and the psychological safety. We have several different cultures, very diverse cultures in APAC, as you have seen, and ensuring that we give everyone the space and the time to build the trust, and the psychological safety for themselves, to allow this is very important. As a German, as you know, we want to do sometimes fast decisions. We want to move fast. And especially here in Asia Pacific, it's very important for me and for everyone to be open-minded and look through a different lens.
More listening and observing than impactful talking.
Correct. Absolutely.
You, as a German now living almost a decade or longer than a decade in Australia, just briefly, what was the bigger challenge for you to adapt to Australia or to now from Australia, regularly travel to countries in Southeast Asia and work with them? What is the bigger challenge for you?
Several challenges, but to put it down in a nutshell, I think being patient is super important. If you come as a German and, for example, you work on a project and you want to get things done, you really need to adapt your style and also your approach, manage it differently. So in Australia, we have a beautiful workplace culture, super nice lifestyle, but you need to approach things a little bit different because your German way does not work well in Australia, and I learned it the hard way.
Thanks very much for sharing. So what we just heard from the HR expert Christian once again reinforces my recommendations. First and foremost comes respect and the commitment to building trust with the people you want to do business or to learn alongside. For impatient individuals from Western culture backgrounds in particular, it can be difficult to tolerate pauses and silences. I spoke about this phenomenon of using and accepting pauses and silences in one of my recent podcast episodes. But in the international context, it is equally challenging to cope with not receiving direct feedback or to refrain from giving direct feedback in a group setting. Psychological safety is essential, and it develops by avoiding confrontation in a group. So if feedback needs to be given at all, it should be done privately in a one-on-one setting, especially if the message is critical. To conclude, let's once again summarize the key insights and lessons I've taken away from this journey and core takeaways I might recommend to keep in mind for you as the listeners of my podcast show. Singapore and Japan show us two very different yet equally sophisticated ways of leading and communicating. One is pragmatic, fast, and globally oriented. The other, the Japanese way, is subtle, harmony-driven, and deeply relational.
Great leadership starts where we stop judging and start understanding. If you work in Asia, listen beyond words, respect silence, invest time in relationships, and never assume that the real conversation happens only in the meeting room. And here's my top tip number one. Southeast Asia, and all countries, perhaps especially Singapore and Japan, offer such extraordinary, outstanding cuisine that the trip itself is worth only for that reason. But above all, make sure you allow time in the evenings to go out for dinner with friends, with your business partners, or the people you are learning with, to enjoy the night and fully experience the fantastic places beyond the hotel lobby. Because it's not just about the excellent food and the occasional great drinks, it is about the personal encounters and the deeper understanding that could never emerge without those informal moments. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, for being part of this, and for your interest in the topic of intercultural understanding. Goodbye for now. I'm Kai Kochmann. Thank you for listening to this podcast show, and I'm looking forward to your feedback. So feel free to leave a comment in the show notes or share your thoughts on Spotify. What did you find particularly interesting? What might have been missing? And which topics would you like to hear of about in future episodes? I appreciate your comments and feedback, and you're also always welcome to email me directly. Just write to Kochmann@reflacta.com. I will definitely reply.